Welcome to episode number 6 of the First Responder Wellness Podcast, the show where we talk about wellness, mental health, leadership, and what it takes to have a wellness culture within your organization. My name is Conrad Weaver, and while I'm not a first responder, I've worked with first responders from all across the country for my film, PTSD 911. The national divorce rate for married couples has been at about 50% for a while. For first responders, it's much higher, as much as 75 or even 80%. That's a staggering statistic. Think of it, 8 out of 10 first responders you work with are likely to be in a divorce. How can that change? Well, the couple I have on the show today is working on that. JD and Shelley Shulgin have been married for almost 43 years. JD is a station captain with the Garland Fire Department with 39 years of service, and Shelley is a full-time farm wife running a small beef cattle operation just outside of Dallas, Texas. JD and Shelley present a firefighter family orientation for new recruits to give them some tools to cope with the stress of the fire service life. They are pouring themselves into the married couples of the Garland Fire Department and making a difference. What are their secrets? And how have they lasted for 43 years? Today, we'll find out. By the way, they have 2 sons who are both firefighters and 4 grandchildren. Stay tuned for this important conversation. Hey, I really appreciate you listening to this podcast. And if you think others would too, please subscribe and share this episode. And be sure to leave a 5-star review if you think it deserves it. If you're interested in sponsoring the show, please send me an email and tell me about your company or organization. We're looking for sponsors who are passionate about the wellness of our first responders. And if that's you, I'd love to talk with you about how you can help. Thanks again for listening. And now here's my interview with JD and Shelley Shulgin. Well, JD and Shelley, welcome to the First Responder Wellness Podcast. It's a privilege and an honor to have you on the program today.
Well, it's a privilege to be here, Conrad. We are so privileged to be a part of the work that you're doing. And we're kind of tagging along, if you will, but you're doing great work. And on behalf of first responders everywhere, thank you. And thank you for the film. Well done. I think it's received accolades in our part of the world. And I know you're carrying this message across the country. And thank you for what you're doing for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's a privilege and an honor to do this. And I've said often in the last couple of years that, you know, first responders take care of our community. And it's time we kind of return the favor and help take care of our first responders. So this is my small way of doing that. So it's an honor.
Grand effort and well received. And thank you so much.
Yeah. So for our audience, I'll have you guys introduce yourselves. Who are you and what do you do?
I'm JD Shulgin. I'm a captain with the Garland Fire Department. Been there 39 years next month. And long career, not ready to quit just yet, but probably going to quit maybe next year, year after. We'll see. And this is my beautiful wife, Shelley.
Hi.
Hi, Shelley.
And I've been married 43 years.
Going on 43.
Okay, got it right. 43
years. Pass that one.
Yeah. And we're a fire service family. My dad was a fireman for 32 years, and currently both our sons are firefighters. So we have a lot of fire service in the family, if you will. We come by it honestly, I guess you'd say.
Yeah. So Shelley, was that something that you were accustomed to when you married JD?
No, not at all. We were married in 81 and he got on the fire service in 84.
Right.
84. Mm-hmm. So not accustomed to it at all, but love it. Absolutely.
Yeah. So tell me about your life. How have you going through life? And now from what I understand, you guys work with other couples in firefighters and first responders. How did that evolve? And how did your relationship get to the point where you say, hey, we need to do this for others?
I think we started a program, I think it was 1992. It's a little, we go way back. There was an article in one of the firefighter magazines, and I just don't remember which one at this point, that came out that talked about a program in the country somewhere where a program was presented to firefighter spouses, significant others, about the fire service and what to expect, schedules. So we picked that idea up and thought, wow, that might be something that we want to do to help new firefighter families as they came into the fire service understand kind of what they're getting into. I guess at that time we'd been in the fire service almost 8 years. And I had promoted at that time to driver engineer. So we were working our way up through the ranks, if you will. And let's see, we had kids by then. Yeah. John,
both kids,
Both kids. And so the dynamics were changing for us and we felt some of the pressure and thought maybe we could help.
And in 1988, JD was in a house fire and burned.
Yeah.
And ended up in the Parkland burn unit. And just with him growing up in a firefighter family and with that, and we just felt like we had something that we could offer other families that might have struggles and just need help getting through some stuff.
Yeah. My dad, as I said, was a firefighter for 32 years. He retired at age 53. I can't remember the date now when he retired, but my dad was married several times. And so we watched the stress, if you will, affect him. And one of the things that we learned is that if the firefighter is good at home, he or she is good at the fire station. If things aren't good at home, not terribly good at the firehouse. And so we were hoping to give them some tools to use to help them navigate or mitigate through life, if you will, as things get stressful as a fire service family.
You know, that's a concept, an idea that I've not heard that before, that phrase before. If he's good at home, you know, it's good at the firehouse. It's sometimes the opposite. I've yes. heard, you know, if you're good at work, you know, then everything's good with the rest of your life.
Right.
But I'd like that. I like that idea of starting, you know, with the basics at home and that solid foundation there. What has been your route to success for that, for being good at home?
I think our route for success at home, and I'm going to be very blunt with you, is based on our faith. We make it a priority to spend time together, to pray together, to attack, if you will, the tougher issues of life. And it never, I don't say it ever gets easy. I think there's just another challenge around the corner that we didn't anticipate or we weren't ready for. And so we kind of retreat, if you will, hunker down to kind of gather around and pray together and seek the Lord about things that are going on in our life and how we address them. You know, we are moving into the sunset of my career. And that's a whole nother challenge with regard to me being home all the time. And so we're looking at that. But I think our
Michelle, are you going to say it's time for you to get out and do something, huh?
Well, you know, we live on a farm and so there's a barn. And I think every third day I just go stay in the barn. Always.
There's always plenty to do.
Give her space, you know.
So, Shelly, for you early on when JD first went into the fire service, what were the challenges that you faced as a wife, as a mom, as a companion?
I think one of the biggest struggle is with the schedule, because for 24 hours, you're the person at home in charge and you make all the decisions. And then they come home a superhero, you know, because everybody loves a fireman. And it's like you have to get re-acclimated to what your role is at home.
Hmm. And how did you do that? How did you handle him coming back home? And
honestly, Conrad, we had a lot of arguing. We ended up in a marriage counselor situation at least twice, and it wasn't a matter of not staying married. It was a matter of making it fun and workable. And because we were both committed to the marriage, it just needed help, needed that adjustment.
Mm-hmm. So the pattern for me, Conrad, was that if things go bad, you just get a divorce and go to the next person. That was the be
real.
That's
what you saw everybody else doing, right?
Exactly. So then when I came home, it was time to, if you will, take off the bars. You're not a captain. You're husband, your father, your whatever the role is. It's time to just disengage and kind of have a reset. And I think a lot of firefighters don't do that. Plus, what do most firefighters do? They get a second job. They go from one job to the next, trying to make that dollar, trying to provide for the family. And it doesn't matter, male or female firefighter, they're busy and they're go-to, they're take care of, their type A personalities. And sometimes it gets in the way. We don't tap the brakes and slow down enough. And that was, I think, a big part of my problem. And so, yeah, we were smart enough to go, this isn't working really good. Let's go get some help. And so we did that.
Was that a difficult decision to go ask somebody to help you to walk through this?
Not for me.
I don't think so, because we were committed and we knew it wasn't working. So we had to find someone that could help us.
But to your question, I do think it's difficult for firefighters in general because of the pride, their ego. I can take care of this. I can handle this. Or they're not willing to put in the hard work to get the benefit.
And marriage is... Go ahead.
One of the things that we try to do when we do our program for the rookies is to mention that we've been to marriage counseling, and you would be so surprised at how many people come up to us and say, oh my gosh, I thought it was just us. Well, it gives them the okay to go do that, go find help.
Right.
Well, you know, marriage is hard enough just for the average family, the average couple. I know for my wife and I, we've been married for 31 years and, it's tough. I mean, even this week has been tough. My wife's been home with COVID all week and has been really sick. And she finally went back to work today. She's a school administrator. And so she was, really needing to get back to work and to be there. And it was, me trying to stay healthy, stay away from her, not to get sick, but also to provide for her, to take care of her and to manage everything else I'm doing. And so, I mean, it's tough. It's a tough thing. But like you guys, we're committed. We're committed. This is who we are. We're a couple. This is the path we're on. And so, but then you throw in your type of work, being gone for every couple of days, you're being gone for 24 hours and sometimes longer. I'm sure that could be a challenge. And I don't know what that's like, but so what did you do coming home off of a shift? I know in the documentary, when one of the firefighters talks about, coming home and she never asked me how my day was, or if she did, I just said, oh, it's a normal day. And I wouldn't go into the details. How did you handle those kind of conversations?
So you're exactly right. What I was very, very aware of was the term secondary trauma. Mm-hmm. We would see absolutely the worst things in the world happening to people. They call us on the worst day of their life. Mm-hmm. And she said, what'd you do? I said, well, nothing. How are you guys? Fine. And I was very short about it. Because I didn't want to share with her things that would impact her in a negative way. And then she's really wanting to know kind of what's going on. So I learned to open up a little bit more about what we did and how things are going and how my guys, my crew was. But also to get the mindset of I'm not at the fire station anymore. Not everything's a crisis. Not everything requires an emergency response. Not everything's, red lights and siren. I would react instead of responding. And I'm still learning how to do that. It's very difficult to respond in an appropriate manner, not to just knee jerk and react. And so that's been a lifelong process. I'm not sure I've crossed the finish line with that one yet, but it's a work in progress. But it's a mindset, And one of the things that's very difficult for us as firefighters is the lack of sleep. One of the things she'll say, I get a text, good morning. Good morning. And the next thing I tell her is about my sleep night. I got 3 hours of sleep. I got 1 hour here and 1 hour here and 1 hour here. That's all. And so she knows, man, this guy's not had enough sleep. And then my brain goes to, okay, you haven't had enough sleep. Think about what you're going to say. Respond appropriately, respond in love, respond in a way that's meaningful, respond in a way that touches her heart and helps her and give yourself, JD, a break, right? You're going to need a nap and you're not going to accomplish everything you want today. And that's okay.
Right.
That's okay. It'll happen tomorrow. So it's a mindset.
Did so just speaking of lack of sleep, did that lack of sleep on the job, on those shifts, did that kind of carry over to at home? You didn't maybe sleep as well at home because of, you know, whatever?
Oh, absolutely. I do not sleep well during the day. My, you know, if I had a really bad night, the most I think I've slept at one during the day is an hour, hour and a half. That's it. So my body's just crying for sleep. Well, the next night is really a good night for sleep. But then the night after is the night I'm going back on duty, if you will, to the station. I don't sleep well. Mm-hmm. I'm already thinking, I got to go to work. I got to get up. I got to be ready. I got to be there. Don't want to be late, blah, 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 blah. So my mind is my worst enemy there. Mm-hmm. And so really, typically, I get one good night out of three. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, if the good Lord blesses us, we don't have too many runs during the night. If I get 5 or 6 hours of sleep at the station, I'm pretty good.
Mm-hmm. So Shelly, how does his lack of sleep then affect you when he's having trouble sleeping?
He can be a little cranky. So it's just, you know, you just learn to deal with that. It's just one more, I guess, attitude or something that you just deal with. He hasn't had sleep, so we're good. It's okay.
But I think the communication comes in there to play, right? Where, okay, we're committed to this relationship. We're committed to this marriage. This is it. I don't want to be married to anybody else. And she'll say, hey, you're being cranky. Hey, you're being, you need to be nice. You can be nice. And one of the things she says, I'm on your side. Mm-hmm. I'm not the enemy. It's like, okay, note to self. Hello. Mm-hmm. I don't need to be that way. She's trying to help me, not hurt. And that's important.
I think that is such an important idea, concept of being on your team. We're on the same team here.
Yes.
I think that, you know, for a successful marriage, you know, I think too many marriages are like, you know, he's here, she's here, and they're on different teams. And, you know, but if you can help your wife, your husband understand that, yeah, I'm for you.
Yes. Exactly. Yes. And I think if I can go back to faith talk for just a second, that's a tactic of the enemy to divide and conquer, to separate us one against another. And if that happens, and it does in every marriage, let's be honest, then we've got to recognize that immediately and address it and say, hey, I'm on your side. And to Conrad, another thing is in the last counselor that I saw was to make a concerted effort to do something together each week, each month, each quarter, maybe even twice a year to do something for us. And it's as simple as saying we're going to have coffee and ginger snaps in the afternoon, and we're going to sit and talk, you know?
Yeah.
Little things like that go a long, long, long way. So, we have to be selfish for each other.
So when your kids were growing up, how did you, as a mom, Shelly, handle, you know, dad coming home and maybe being grumpy? How did you handle that with the kids and all of that? What was that challenge like?
We were just always honest about it with the kids. You know, dad hadn't had much sleep. Let's maybe be a little quieter than we would be. Maybe go find something else to do, just them and me, and let him rest. It wasn't very difficult at all, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me tell you one of the things she did do, and this is just the boys would say, we have two sons, as I said, they'd say, well, let's do this. And she said, no, let's wait until your dad gets home and we'll all do this together. So they really looked forward to me coming home and hey, we're going to do this big event. We're going to go out to eat. We're going to get pizza. We're going to whatever it is. My experience was not that growing up. We didn't like my dad coming home. As always, you know, he came home and he was still a captain and he was still, we got to do this. We got to fix this. We're going to mow the yard and we're going to clean the garage and we're going to wash windows. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, there just wasn't a lot of fun. It was real task oriented. And that's something Shelly did. She said, let's wait, let's save this and do this together, which was really a blessing.
Hmm. Wow. So when you have all these experiences and you, you know, went to marriage counseling and you got yourself worked on as a couple, at what point did you say, hey, you know what, we need to share this with someone else. We need to reach out to other people, What did you see that was going on with other, with your coworkers, and what made you say, hey, we need to do this?
I think the biggest thing for me was the divorce rate. Mm-hmm. The divorce rate in the fire service, police service, paramedic services is through the roof. It's much higher than the general population. Mm-hmm. I had a chaplain with the Plano Fire Department, which is a sister city of ours there in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And he quoted, said one time that the divorce rate in the fire department, fire service, was either 71 or 76%. And I said, John, I said, where did you get that? Where is that in writing somewhere? I want that. He never got it to me, but I've always quoted it just like that. But that is significantly higher. And I think part of it's the stress, part of it's the schedule. You know, you're crossways with your spouse and you're making ambulance runs and you go to that hospital and there's that cute little nurse and she's flirting with you and you go, you know what? She gets it. She gets me. And that gal at home doesn't. And by golly, and then the affair starts and then the drug use, the alcohol abuse, all those things factor in because you're trying to deal with the stress. Mm-hmm. And so the divorce rate in the fire service was so much worse. We thought, well, maybe we can give them some tools. Maybe we can say, hey, be warned. There are some things coming down the road that you're traveling that are going to be traps and things that you can know are problems. And maybe we can give you some tools or at least a heads up to avoid them.
Mm-hmm. And so what was your first step in doing that? And how did you,
You know, this is pre-email, pre-PowerPoint, pre-nothing. I mean, we had overhead projector and cartoons and little exercises, if you will, about communication and pro-marriage tips. You know, what is important in a marriage and things to consider, like turn off the TV, go out to eat, spend quality time with your spouse. Quality time with your kids, things like make a real dedicated, focused effort to focus on your family and focus on your relationship. Because if you don't, nobody else will. One of the things I was telling firefighters in these classes is, listen, if you don't tell your wife you love them, somebody on A shift or B shift will. And that's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
Of course, I was on C shift. So there you go. But yeah, you got to put your effort into that primary relationship, because when things go south, when I got burned, you know, this was my cheerleader. This is the girl that scrubbed me coming home, you know, and having to do hard work. Mm-hmm. And that was a big turning point in our relationship for the better, believe it or not. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. What has been So Shelley, what's been the response to other fire wives to these classes and to the things that you guys are teaching? What are they saying about all of this?
I think it's been very well received, because we share with them when we start that, you know, they may have a critical incident stress situation that needs intervention from other firefighters or from professionals. But a lot of what breaks marriages up is the everyday stress, the little stuff that nitpicks, and you find yourself arguing and fighting about that is ridiculous. And so we're more there to deal with that kind of stuff and just kind of warn them. Yeah, the big stuff might happen, and it's rough, but the rougher thing is to live miserable. So let's just work on.
It's a kind of choose your hard, right?
Yeah.
But the wives, I think they really, really appreciate hearing from another woman, another fire wife, someone who's been through the stress and you know, lived through it.
Mm-hmm. And these days, there's probably fire husbands, maybe.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure there are.
Yeah, same thing. And that's a different dynamic with regard to women in the fire service who physically sometimes don't last as long as a 25, 30, 35 year career. Mm-hmm. Just physically, it's just so demanding. But then you've got a real role reversal, if you will, because he's taking care of the kids. He's the one left at home. And then the other the worst dynamic, I think, is when the firefighter is married to a police officer, the firefighter is married to another firefighter, the firefighter is married to a paramedic, and then you've got stress from both those occupations in the same household, in the same relationship. That is the perfect storm, if you will. Mm-hmm. We never faced that. Shelley was a stay-at-home mom after we had our two sons, and we homeschooled, and we were very big in working on the family. But we didn't have that extra stress, which is very, very difficult. Now, let me couple that with something else. I had a firefighter the other day who saw a tragic run. We immediately put him in our peer support team. I was the lead guy with this guy, put him into a counseling situation to try to help him understand it and work through it. This kid's 20 years old, 20. His third shift at the firehouse, he has this horrific run. Mm. He may not make it back. He may resign at 20, which if he needs to do that, I wish him the best. I want his head screwed on straight. I don't want him to go on to a career that is perfect for him. Mm-hmm. But I had a chief officer call me because he knew about the situation. Here's his question. Is this generation less resilient than we are? I said, yes. But my generation was less resilient than my dad's. Mm. However, my dad's generation of firefighters never had the opportunity to hear a program about couples from a couple. Mm-hmm. They didn't have the mental health support that you so well put together in your documentary. Yeah. And so we have the tools and resources now for this generation to get some help. And we understand it better than we ever have. I don't think we completely understand it. We may never. But we have to be able to give them tools and resources. If they choose not to use them, that's on them. But at least they had the opportunity to say, you know what? JD and Shelley said that I'd come home and wouldn't have a lot of sleep. JD and Shelley said, wow, we might need to see a counselor. JD and Shelley said things are going to get tough and we need to focus together and hunker down and pray or do whatever it works for us to make this success, to succeed.
Yeah. You know, how important is it to help people understand that, you know, going to work is maybe only a third of our life? We have this other whole part of us that we have to live and we have to thrive, you know, and if we want to have successful, happy relationships and then have a long, productive career and to thrive at that, then we have to work on both of those things. You have to work on the career and make that a success, but we also have to work sometimes even harder on the other part of our life, right?
So you said it perfectly, and you're exactly right. I think what we don't get as a society or a generation anymore is how to work on the relationship. Mm. You know, I think these cell phones are a huge distraction, but they're also a great tool if you use it correctly. You know. Sure. We can text each other. She can really know if I had a bad night because she can look back on the was it Life 360 and see all through the night the engine was all over the city, you know, and she knows he didn't get much sleep. And so it can be a great tool, but it can also be a real distraction from the relationship. It's easier for me to bury myself in that phone or on the internet or something else and avoid the relationship because I don't know how to do relationships. Mm-hmm. And thank God we had enough chutzpah or a grit to say, I think we need to go see a counselor and to get this thing fixed. You know, mm-hmm. We don't get a second chance. This is it.
Yeah. So Shelley, how stressful is it to see that map thing and to see that he's been here or there and everywhere? Cause I've had people in that I've known here locally who are first responders and wives have said that, yeah, I don't listen to the scanner anymore because if I have that on and I hear his patrol car number or whatever, I get worried, you know? So right. How stressful is that for you being at home, knowing that there's stuff going on that your husband's involved in?
I guess I'm not a worrier by nature. So that's a plus. Mm-hmm. I don't look at it until I get up in the morning just to kind of, you know, check the weather and see what the day might be like. But we'd have to go back to the faith thing. I pray over him and just ask the good Lord to watch over him and take care of him. And that's all you can do. That's the very best you can do.
You know, Conrad, that's our last phone call at night. The last call I make from the fire station is to Shelly. And we pray together over the phone. Hey, how was your day? What'd you do? How's your day? And it kind of exchange, you know, what happened. And then we pray. And that's kind of into that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to her credit, she got the worst phone call any fire wife could get. I think it was 2 o'clock in the morning when I got burned. Mm-hmm. And so she's lived that worst case scenario, if you will. And so she's a veteran and she's got the scars to prove it, if you will. So I think we've lived and worked through the worst of the worst with that. I think it's changing now with regard to retirement, you know, looking forward to what the next chapter of our lives has in store for us, but also still to be involved at some level, to give back to the firefighters and to help them as best we can. Part of it is, I think we're going to lose some credibility when I retire. The current chief said, maybe we wouldn't have you guys back to do this program every year. I'm thinking, yeah, you say that, but at some point they're going to think, well, who's this old guy, you know, and how did he marry such a pretty girl, you know, and we're going to lose the credibility to speak into their lives. It hadn't happened yet. We just got an email yesterday to do the program again this January for a new class of recruits, and we're looking forward to it. But we kind of see the end, as it were, and we want to be careful about that.
Yeah,
want to end well.
So I want to. There was a question that floated through my mind. I got to see if I can rewind my mind and get it back.
Sure.
But sure. I know what it was. So let's dive deeper into faith, and because it's something that here recently I was listening to someone speak, and someone I respected, and he was like, well, you know, my wife and I, we just recently, or just at one point in our marriage, we just decided to start praying with each other. And I was like,
yeah,
we've been doing that every day since the day we got married. How important is that, to have that kind of relationship, that you pray over each other, you pray for each other, you pray with together with each other?
Do you want to go first?
Well, I think it's huge. You know, if you really, really believe that there's a God in heaven that watches out for you, and you trust that he's got your best interests at heart, then anything that happens, you can deal with, because he's given you what you need. He's given you all the tools you need to deal with it. And he loves us more than we can understand. So there's really never a need to worry. I mean, we do it, right? Mm-hmm. But there's never really a need to worry. He's in charge and he's got it. So I would say faith is just probably the most important thing. And I trust that JD, when he's gone for 24 hours and that cute little ER nurse flirts with him, he's married. And he knows he's married. He's married before God and to me. And I can rest in that. Mm-hmm. I don't have to worry. Mm-hmm.
Conrad, they don't flirt with me. I'm too old. They don't, you know, that didn't happen.
You got a lot of young strapping bucks there and, you know, on the engine that.
I do. And I pray over them and I watch them too.
And
really warn them. Shelly touched on a good point. The other thing I want to add is twofold. One, we went to a conference years ago called Marriage Ministries International. I think it's changed names. That's in Colorado. And one of the things they talk about is hidden issues. And hidden issues within a relationship are things that I typically, as a man, would mask and cover up. But when we pray, one man once said, when you pray, you share your heart. She can hear my heart when I pray. So hidden issues notwithstanding, that hidden issue may come out, that there's a fear I have, or there's a worry I have, or a problem, or something I'm dealing with, and I may pray about it. She goes, why? I never knew that. Mm-hmm. And that's another opportunity for the Lord to give her insight, and for me to give, for the Lord to give me insight too. So we know better what our hearts are saying and what our hearts are yearning for or struggling with, and we can pray about that.
Mm-hmm. So, because when he prays, and I hear his heart, a lot of times fear and uncertainty is masked by anger.
Yeah.
And so in my mind, I'm like, oh my, what, why is he so angry? What made him mad? What? And it's not that something he understands made him mad. It's this fear that he may not even realize is there. It made him mad.
Right. Right. Because men don't show fear, that, and firefighters don't show fear. Oh my gosh. No. That would be inappropriate, but we can certainly cover it with anger as an umbrella emotion. That's not healthy. Mm-hmm. Not healthy.
You know, a practice that my wife and I have been doing since day one, even before we were married, we were doing this is we like to go out and walk. We walk together. We try to walk every day.
Great.
And, you know, 2 to 4 miles, depending on the day.
Wow.
And during those walks, we pray.
Good.
Not the whole time, but we take a time in that moment. And we have seen amazing answers to prayer.
That's great.
Prayers that we prayed, you know, specifically for work situations or for whatever, you know, we have seen just amazing things. And what I always say that our walks are for the heart. They're good for the heart physically because we're walking.
Yes.
But they're also good for the heart in our relationship.
And exactly.
They're good for the heart with the Father, you know?
Yes.
And so it's just been, it's been an amazing journey, and we love doing that. And, you know, this week we didn't get to because my wife's been, you know, laid up with COVID, but, and we look forward to that. We each say, and even when I'm traveling, you know, my wife will say, you know, she'll say, I really miss our walks. And I said, yeah, I do too. Oh, and so that's just something that we value greatly. And I think that's been part of our success in our marriage, that, you know, we make a commitment to do that.
Absolutely. That's a great story. Beautiful story, you know, boy, I affirm you in that. And I think that if more people were calculated in that daily, I think it would do wonders for us. You know, think of the times that we would spend together as a couple, or the time I need to spend with my children, my grandchildren, whatever. You just can't get that time back, and you want to invest your time wisely. And so that's great. Well done. Well done.
So the programs that you guys do, I guess it was sanctioned or whatever by the agency, by your organization there?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We went to, that's been a long time ago. I think it was Chief Grammer at the time. And we said, we've got this idea for this program. Didn't cost them anything. You know, they had to print a few things, and it's evolved to now what we do is on a Saturday afternoon, I think about 3 o'clock. And we had one program that was 8 hours. So that's a little extensive. Mm-hmm. It's now down to about 2 hours. We give them a kind of a thick book of our handouts and all the things that we share with them. They can take home with them and use as a reference, a book list, the books that we recommend, things like that. But 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, get a sitter, come see, have tea, coffee, maybe a slice of cake or pie or fruit or whatever, and then go on a date. Take the night out, go out and go on a date night and look at that book and go, I think JD and Shelley have lost their minds, you know, or look at this. I think this has value for us. We can incorporate this. And we encourage them too, to make friendships with other firefighters and their spouses in the class. You know, they're going to walk the same walk through the next 25, 30 years, 20 years, whatever it is. And so they can have another resource there of people to say, hey, is this working for you? No, that didn't work for me, but this works for me. Maybe it'll work for you. And they can share in that together. So that's kind of what's evolved to, and seems to work really good. We finally got a good model working after all these years. So,
well, that's awesome. I think that's something that's needed, you know, more and more across the country, across the globe, really. Is this something that you guys, have you taught about this at conferences or places like that?
We did a couple of times.
I didn't remember.
Yeah, well, we've been to a couple of hospitals to do that. We presented at a Texas conference one time years ago. We were kind of hoping it would gain some traction and that we could go to the places. I mean, we've been out of the state in Texas and gone to different cities. And other people may be doing the same thing and we just don't know. But we've never been invited multiple places to do multiple events before. And I was kind of not disheartened by that, but was hoping that would kind of gain some traction, that we could make a presentation or keep it going. Now, I will tell you, in Garland, we have a couple that's already signed up to say, hey, when you guys are ready to leave, we're ready to take over. They're the perfect couple. We're looking forward to doing that. And we're going to hand it off and keep the program going, in at least in our organization, which I think is great. Mm-hmm. So we're looking forward to that.
That's awesome. What would you say to a couple that maybe they've been in the fire service for a number of years and they're just starting to see some things happening that are troubling or disheartening? What would you say to them? What's a good first step to kind of bring this thing back together?
We've actually had that happen. There was a couple that went through and we watched them, and it was from our position on this side of their face, they looked bored and just not interested at all. And then in a couple of years, we saw them again because they can come as often as they want. Mm-hmm. Once they've been, they can come as often. And then we saw them again, and that was their situation. They were struggling. Mm-hmm. And so they were coming, trying to get more ideas, new ideas, you know, reaffirm what they thought they heard. And it didn't work for them, but, you know, that it is available.
I often tell people, I can tell what's important to you by where you spend your money and where you spend your time. Mm-hmm. If you're not spending time in your primary relationships, and if you're not spending some money in that primary relationship, then it's not going to work. It's not going to last. So be careful, be mindful about where you spend your time and where you spend your money.
Mm-hmm. And it's an investment, right?
I mean, it's an investment. Absolutely. Absolutely. Because when it all boils down, the kids and grandkids are all grown, married, and gone. It's right back here. And this is where it started. Mm-hmm. And this needs to be healthy and supportive.
Well, and what's fun is we can look at our kids and grandkids and it's like, hey, you remember, you know what, when they were born, do you remember this? Do you remember? A lot of people don't have that kind of history with each other anymore.
No, they don't.
You know, they've been married 5 years and divorced because they could, you know,
right. Something. Well, it's become such an accepted thing. It's just as normal, you know.
Yes.
Yes.
Which is so sad. Yeah.
Yes. And that, so sad. That's not God's intention. You know, you and I both know that. We know that as believers that primary relationship is the marriage, and there's so much scripture supporting that. Mm-hmm. And here we are in this broken world, this fallen world, mm-hmm. where we have broken relationships and broken people, and they just give up, they quit, and they go on to the next relationship. There are people in the generation preceding me in the fire service that have been married 4 and 5 mm-hmm. times. I'm thinking, looking at the firefighter, did you think maybe you're the common denominator here? Did you think maybe there's a problem here that needs to be addressed?
You're taking yourself with you, right?
Exactly. Exactly. You're carrying that problem to the next relationship, and there it goes again.
Yeah. And I think one of the things, too, is we don't commit. It's like, I'm committed to this. Mm-hmm. This newest generation doesn't understand commitment. No. They flip, you know, 800 channels, and there's still nothing mm-hmm. on. And it's... You can't think that way. And we also understand you committed, you said you were going to stay married, death do us part, all of that. And I think the joy comes in the obedience of staying. You just fight through it mm-hmm. and stay married. And we always qualify that with there are situations of abuse. There are situations. Right. We're not talking about that.
Right.
We're talking about these people that just say we grew apart. We have different interests. You know what? You don't. You just don't. Mm-hmm. You don't. You stay focused together.
Yes. Yes.
Well, it's like, you know, going back to talking about that investment. You know, if I want to get returns on my investment in the stock market in Microsoft, I've got to invest into Microsoft. You know, I've got to spend that money to do that. I'm not going to get any returns on Microsoft stock if I don't make that investment. And it's the same in a relationship. If I don't make that investment, whether it's financial, time, you know, all those things, taking care of myself so that I can present myself in a healthy manner, you know,
exactly,
then we're not going to get a return on that investment.
One of the things that we do in the program is you're probably familiar with Gary Smalley, mm-hmm. the 5 languages of love, 5 love languages. We actually have them take that test and find out what their primary and their secondary love language is. So they know how their spouse receives love and they know how they receive love, which is I hate to tell you, we were married 29 years. I remember it like it was yesterday when I finally figured out what her love language was, walking into a Kroger store in Rowlett, Texas. It was acts of service. Mm-hmm. It was, she wants me to take out the trash. That means that I love her. It's like, man, I can do that because my job is public service. I serve people. Well, what better way to invest, to use your term, again, invest in this relationship, is to do the things that she wants done around the house. Mm-hmm. That's easy. That's absolutely easy. And yet it tells her, I love you. You're important to me. And you're this is the primary relationship. So again, yeah, investment is a great, great word.
Mm-hmm. Well, so going back to my question about with a couple who's struggling, what's a first step? What should they do? What's an action step that they should do to, if they really want to say, hey, we want to save this, what's step number one?
I think if they reached a point that they can't make it work together, they've got to get help. Mm-hmm. And for me, I'm being on our peer support team. We've had people reach out to me or us to say, this is not working. What do we do? And as a peer support team member, I will walk along with them and try to put them into a counseling situation with a professional to help them work through it, if you will. Mm-hmm. And you know, that costs money, but there we go. That's an investment. Mm-hmm. And they're going to have to change the way you think or change what you're doing. That's an investment. That costs you something. And I think that's part of it. And we always try to encourage couples to do what we do, pray together, spend time together, fight through it, work through it. There can't be a rainbow without a cloud and a storm, as the saying goes. And so work through the storm and get to the rainbow, get to the good stuff, because it happens. And every relationship is going to have trouble. It's just normal.
We're human.
That's, scripture tells us that. Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance, and let endurance have its perfect and complete work, that you may be lacking in nothing. So there's something at stake here. And so we're going to endure, we're going to persevere so that we can rise above or push through or conquer whatever it is that we're struggling with to be a better couple. And then what does that mean? That means that we're better for each other, better for our sons, better for our grandkids, better for the fire service, better for the farm. You fill in the blank. Better for our congregation. Mm-hmm. It just makes us stronger, and that's good.
Now, one of the first questions we ask couples, though, is, do you want to stay married?
Yeah, do you want to stay married?
Because if no, well, we got nothing to work with
then,
here.
Don't waste my time, yeah. And don't waste your time. Mm-hmm. If you're committed to this relationship, if you say, yeah, I want this to work, well, she needs to hear that, or he needs to hear that. Okay, they're committed to this, yeah. But if they say, no, I'm not interested, well, okay, then there's nothing to work with there, yeah. In our opinion. Now, we will encourage them.
Yeah.
We won't say, well, we're done. Have a nice day. Goodbye. Mm-hmm. We're going to challenge them a little bit. Well, how much have you invested in this relationship? Mm-hmm. Are you sure this is something that you're ready to let go of? What about the kids, for the kids' sake, and what damage would be done to them? I hate it when they say, oh, the kids are good. They're resilient. They'll bounce back. No, that's a lie. Yeah. That's a lie. You're talking to a guy that's 63 years old that remembers the day his mom and dad said, we're getting a divorce. Mm-hmm. I was 8 years old. I can still remember that day. And the sad thing, both my parents are still alive. Mm-hmm. I can never go home. Mm-hmm. There's no place on this earth where my mom and dad live together under the same roof that I can call home. Mm-hmm. And that's a brokenness in my spirit and my heart that nobody can fix ever. So don't ever tell me that the kids are going to be okay. Don't ever tell me that they're resilient, they're going to bounce back. No, there's a wound there that can never be healed. Mm-hmm. Never.
And that's the unfortunate thing about our society today. There's, yep. Millions and millions of people that are there at that place and have experienced that loss.
There was a book, I cannot remember the author now, Broken Childhood, Adult Pain. I can't remember the author right now. It's on our book list. Perfect example of that. The broken childhood results in adult pain. We carry that pain into a relationship, and we don't understand it. And so we sabotage the primary relationship. It ends in divorce, and we go back and do the same thing again and again and again because we've not dealt with that brokenness that we suffered as a child or as a teenager, as a young adult. And it doesn't have to be a divorce situation from your parents. It can be anything. But yet we don't address it. And that's what we do. We want to tell that couple, if you're committed to this, let's find some help so that you can push through and conquer, so that you can succeed, so that you can write a happy ending to this great, great relationship, this great story.
And then it goes back to when you have a healthy relationship at home, your work relationships, your work's going to be so much better.
Exactly. Exactly. We really believe that. And I think there's some evidence to that, that the firefighter, the police officer, the paramedic, whose home life is good, they're much more focused. Let me tell you a quick story. There was a guy named Jim Reese years ago in the FBI, and he was on a shopping trip with his family. They had one daughter, and they were going to buy big girl furniture. Big day. We're going to buy big girl furniture. He gets a phone call from the FBI. He was a hostage negotiator, and they had an airplane with a guy with a bomb going to blow the whole plane up. Mm. And he looked at his wife and said, "They need me." And she looked at him, and she could have said, "What? Are you kidding me? Not today. Today is big girl furniture day." Mm. And she didn't do that. She looked at him and said, "We can do this another day. Buy big girl furniture. Go do what you do so well for the FBI and take care of those people." What did she give the FBI? Absolutely the fully supported hostage negotiator that went and did his best that day. And that's what we want for the fire service. That's what we want for the police officer. I know they're fully supported at home, and there's no qualm. There's no question about the home life. They support me 110%. And I'm ready to do my job because my family's behind me. And that's gold.
And he didn't have to feel that's the gold. Guilt of leaving his family back there, right?
Right. She took care of that. I wish I could hug her neck. She did a great job that day, you know?
You know, because if he'd have gone to that situation carrying that guilt, that would have been the back of his head, the back of his mind. And it would not have made his work so much more effective.
Exactly. Well said. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Well, there's a lot we can learn from you guys, and what you're doing there in Garland is amazing, and just want to say thank you for that commitment to each other and commitment to the work of helping, you know, couples be healthy. I think that's an important work that you guys are doing.
You're very kind. Thank you for giving us a chance to share, and we are certainly behind you in your work, and just glad to be a little part of it.
Yeah.
Thank you very
much. Absolutely. Thanks, JD and Shelley. Your work is so very important, and I appreciate you sharing your insights with us. And thank you for listening to the show. I really appreciate it. And don't forget to leave a review and give it 5 stars if you think it's worth it. And please subscribe to the show. And remember, you are not alone. If you need someone to talk to and don't know where you can turn, dial 988 for help. Until next time, be well, take care of yourself and those around you, and go out and do something great in the world.